Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, Ted Williams. Scott Spears along with you on this Tuesday, April the 21st, 2020, 4/21/2020, 17 minutes past the hour. You're tuned into the Now program. Scott Spears along with you for the ride, and we are going to kick off the morning this morning with a big news story in Marion, a big news story in Ohio, and as of yesterday, a big news story nationally. MCI, located here in Marion, Ohio, at this particular time, according to the data we have, has 1,828 confirmed cases among the inmates of COVID-19, 109 staff members infected, making up 73% of the population of MCI. It has sprung Marion to number one of diagnosed COVID-19 cases in the state of Ohio and made national news yesterday as the biggest prison outbreak, they're saying, of this disease in the country. National Guard has been called in. The Ohio National Guard has been called in as of the weekend as well. To help us discuss this and everything else going on COVID-19 is the Marion Public Health Commissioner, a good friend of this program, Tracy Kinsler. Tracy, how are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
Doing very well. It was an interesting week in the history of this COVID-19 pandemic for Marion, that's for sure.
Yes, absolutely.
Tracy, let's kind of start here from the beginning with the facts of it. 1,828 inmates have now been diagnosed, 104 staff members, 73% of the prison population. By your best estimation, what happened there that did not happen in other prisons?
That's a good question. I'm not exactly sure about that. I know that they are starting to do this mass testing at other prisons, so it wouldn't surprise me if they join us with really high numbers. I think yesterday Pickaway was up to 1,200, and I think they're still doing testing there. To me, a lot of what probably happened was because everybody got to be tested, they had these really high numbers. If we were able to test everybody in the community, I think our numbers would be a lot higher. And particularly in a prison situation where they're not able to social distance or follow the stay-at-home order, I feel like that we're seeing the results that we would have seen in the community if we hadn't taken these aggressive steps. So I think, you know, we have another, I'm going to say, week or so to see what testing is done in the other facilities. And then once we get a handle on that, we can start to take our time to investigate what happened, how did we get here, and how can we prevent it from happening again?
Because obviously at the prison, we cannot have a stay-at-home order, as you said. It's hard to social distance. What are they doing now so the other 27% does not get infected? Do we know?
Well, I think what they're doing is deep cleaning all of the time. They're separating out the inmates who are positive from the inmates who are negative. They're keeping people in their particular dorms, and so they're not doing any interacting in common areas and things like that. And then the guards are monitoring themselves. They're monitoring inmate symptoms to make sure, you know, especially in an employee, that they get screened out right away and sent home.
At this particular time, there were a lot of things going around when you get a story of this magnitude. The National Guard, the Ohio National Guard, has come in. Do we know what they're doing there at this point?
I think what they are doing is supplementing the staff that is off. So they, all of those staff members that you mentioned are on quarantine. So that, you know, they're understaffed, obviously. So the National Guard is there to help supplement them until they can kind of get people back off of quarantine and back into work.
A lot of this became a news story because over the weekend we became number one in Ohio because of this in diagnosed cases, and then the national news picked up on it yesterday and it became a national story. How does that affect Marion in the long run, do you think?
Well, I think, you know, I think seeing our numbers and seeing this attention makes a lot of people get really worried about how bad the spread is in the community. And I understand that. You know, you don't know what the next step is going to be. Where is this going to spread to next? You know, we have the prison next door to Marion Correctional Institute, North Central Correctional Institute. What's going to happen there? And then you have all of the family members of the guards who have COVID. You know, where do they work? What's, you know, what is the risk there? And so we're kind of sorting through all of that stuff right now to figure out, you know, how this could further impact our community. So, you know, that takes a lot of behind-the-scene works that people don't see. But we are working with, you know, other employers and things like that. So what's our plan going to be if, you know, this continues to spread and our hotspot jumps out into the community rather than being contained in a prison?
I would think that would have to be a major fear now, because to know that 109 people who work there have been infected, some of them go in the community, I'm sure. Some of them have been in the community infected with this illness. Is that a scary thing?
It is and it isn't. So I feel comfortable that the staff at MCI is trying for the most part to do their part to stay at home even before they get their test results. So most of the time when our nurses call to do their initial assessment when we get the positive result back and to do their contact tracing, they've had very few contacts. They have already been self-quarantining. I feel like, you know, they are trying to do their part to make sure that it doesn't spread into the community. But then you do have those concerns of where do their family members that live in their house work? Do they work at a nursing home, because that's a very vulnerable population? Are they healthcare workers? Things like that. And so, so our nurses really do a detailed interview with them. When's the last time the spouse worked? Where did they work? Is it an employer that we need to notify? Is there anybody else that they work closely with that should be tested? So they're trying to go really deep into this and make sure that they catch that stuff so that they can notify an employer and, you know, let them know there could be an issue.
I believe there's a story, I don't know if it ran yesterday or is running today in the local paper, that families of prisoners believe that not enough is being done. They're worried about their family members. Same thing with people who work at the prison. Is there anything that can ease their worry at this point?
I wish that I could tell them I've been in there and seen it, and I know that, you know, they're doing their best, but, you know, it's a state agency, and so I haven't gone to the prison to see. And I get some complaints, you know, that they're not doing what they tell you they're doing and things like that. But so I would encourage people to call the Department of Rehabilitation and Corrections, and we have their phone number on our website, on our coronavirus page. To express those concerns, and you know, it's probably not any consolation, but I do believe they're trying as hard as they can to keep people as safe as they can. You know, when you're in the thick of it, it's, you know, it feels like chaos, but then as we start to come out of it, you know, you can start to change the way you're responding, say, well, this didn't work, we need to do something else, and it becomes a work in progress. And I know that's a little consolation when you're talking about your family members and their safety, but, you know, with this pandemic, you know, everybody's just trying the best they can in a really bad situation.
When you talk about a number like over 1,800 cases, do we know or will we know the health conditions of these people? With over 1,800 people, I mean, are these severe cases? Are these mild cases? Are they people who are really ill? And if so, can they be treated at the prison, or will they be taken to the hospital, and have any been taken there?
There have been some taken there. I don't have that number. I don't get a report of that, so I don't have the exact number. But they are trying to treat everybody they can at the infirmary in the prison. If they need more medical help, their contract is with Ohio State Hospital in Columbus, so they're taking people there. If they're unstable, they're bringing them to Marion General to get stable, and then Marion General is transferring them to Ohio State. I think a large portion of the people tested are asymptomatic, meaning they don't have any symptoms, which is what we would expect to see also in the community. That's a very high number. But I think you also have a lot of people there that are over the age of 60 that have chronic medical conditions, and those are the ones, you know, that we worry the most about.
There was a story, you know, and again, it's social media, that a prisoner had died, that all these things were going on. What is the truth in the situation at this point?
I have not been able to ascertain that anybody has died. I'm going to try to look into that more today, because I feel like we would have gotten notified, but I can't say that for sure, because I know that there's a lot going on there. But I will definitely have an answer today about that, and we will post something on our Facebook page and let everybody know.
Outside of the prison at this particular point in Marion, where are the numbers and how are things doing with that particular group?
We have 96 community cases. So that includes the MCI employees. I would say they're probably half of that number at least. And our cases, though, outside of the prison have really kind of flattened out. We may get one a day, two a day. But I do expect to see another spike because we're processing the guards that were done in that mass testing right now. So yesterday, we had 15 guards that were mixed into that batch of inmates that we were processing, and they were tested on Thursday. And they're doing more testing today on all of the MCI employees that didn't work on Thursday that they didn't get to test. So we'll have some more MCI workers coming back probably by the end of the week. And then after that, I suspect that we're going to level off because we'll be done with the entire prison. So maybe we'll start to notice that our peak is starting to, you know, turn downward.
Yeah, Tracy, yesterday we learned that the schools were not going to go back this year. And even during the press conference in which Governor DeWine announced that, he wasn't sure that we were fully going to go back in the fall. So that's being looked at right now. Too early to tell. What does that tell you as we get closer and closer to this May 1st deadline that we're all on right now, as far as how this is going to play out over the next couple months?
I think that on May 1st, there's going to be very minimal changes to the stay-at-home order. And I don't know what they're going to be, but I think, you know, the governor's going to dip his toe in the water and see what kind of ripples are created. And so I think we'll have very limited changes for 2 weeks, then maybe some more small changes for another 2 weeks as they gauge whether the decisions they make cause that curve to start to turn upward again. So, you know, I think it's going to be a very slow process of reopening. That's certainly the message they're delivering to us. They're not giving us any details of what that looks like, but they're telling us, you know, it's going to be very slow, very detailed. Dr. Acton refers to it as using a surgical knife rather than a blunt instrument, so that they're making it more precise and following it better than they were able to in the beginning.
At this point, Tracy, you know, just human nature, the longer we're in something, the longer something goes on, if you don't get ill, it seems like the more lax people get. I noticed the stimulus checks came out last week, and certainly anybody who went to any store that is still open last week saw that they were busy. People buying televisions, people going to the grocery store more, people going out to eat more. Do you think that we are still behaving as we need to behave this far into the illness?
I think here in Marion, we did see that, but when people see how high our numbers are, it does make them take it more seriously. It reminds them. But I can feel kind of in the air the patience wearing out for people. It's hard even for me to not see family and friends and to just be able to go somewhere. You know, you're already stressed out. So, yeah, I think it's going to get harder and harder for us to all, you know, stay inside and not follow our normal habits and not go to work and things like that. So, you know, I feel like that's, like you said, human nature. But with this virus, it's going to continue to remind us that we need to keep staying home and being vigilant, because we're going to see hot spots and pop-ups of, spread, and it's going to continue to remind us and kind of bring us back to that focus of we're trying to save people's lives.
Tracy, final question, because this is something I think we all think about. In the community, as opposed to the prison at this point, everybody is not tested, and as we've constantly said since the beginning, a lot of people will have very mild symptoms. They will not have, you know, things that would even make them want to go to the doctor or the hospital. Will we ever really know how many people had this?
I don't think we will ever really know. I know they're working on that antibody test, and if that ever gets off the ground, people can get tested to see if they have the antibodies. I think that's the only way we would ever know. But you're still truly not going to know, because not everybody's going to want to get that test. I think everything they're going to be giving us about the numbers that were ultimately impacted during this pandemic are going to be based on modeling and sampling and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Tracy, it's always interesting to catch up with you, especially this week with all the news that's come about in regard to the prison, and hopefully it all plays out for the best for everybody. So thank you for joining us, and I know we'll talk again very soon.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Tracy Kinsler, Marion Public Health Commissioner. Isn't that all very interesting? You look at these numbers yesterday, 828 inmates affected, 104 staff members affected, 73% of the inmate population. It's a tough situation, because how do you social distance? How do you do 6 feet apart in a prison? I don't know that you can. And here comes the news media, who loves a story like this, that now Marion is number one in the state of Ohio with diagnosis, and how it's a national news story now because it's the hardest hit prison in America. I don't know if that will continue on to other prisons or not. We don't really know what caused it here. Clearly somebody had it, and clearly somebody, I guess it's just the rapid spread of this particular disease, as near as I can tell, is what's been going on. But we will see as we go down the road. And as we continue on this morning on the program, certainly COVID-19 coronavirus is the topic everywhere in every state across the United States today and overseas as well. And there's an interesting story right now going on in Pennsylvania, where legendary comedian Bill Cosby is incarcerated. We all know that Mr. Cosby is over 80 years old, and learned recently that he has had some health concerns beyond his glaucoma and blindness at this particular point that may put him at risk for the COVID-19 pandemic. He's still in prison at this point. And to learn more about this is a gentleman who's been on this show before. He is Mr. Cosby's representative, Andrew Wyatt. Andrew, how are you?
I am doing great, Scott. How are you doing this morning? And I hope and pray that you, your family, and all those closest and dearest to you are safe and healthy, as well as your listeners.
Absolutely. We're all getting through this thing. It really is unprecedented, Andrew. And before we start talking about Mr. Cosby, what have you made of this whole thing?
Look, this whole thing, I've been traveling all over the place, and I felt like I've already had it, like a lot of people are saying, because I was in L.A., New York, Philadelphia, and I got really sick in January, and really never recovered until like the beginning of March. Could not taste anything, felt like I had grease in my mouth, just all kind of things. Went to the emergency room, and they kept saying, well, we'll give you a flu test. But, you know, this whole thing, the way it has hit this country, it's an opportunity now for us to all come together and for us to remove a lot of this hidden hatred in our hearts. You know, it has shown us that we're all on the same level now. Rich, poor, indifferent, we're all on the same level. And now you're seeing people, you know, come together and helping each other. Just the type of efforts that have been put in by communities across this country to take care of the homeless population, who is subjective to really contracting this virus. You see what the healthcare community is doing. Now you see where mandatory healthcare is really needed across this country. So it's going to change the trajectory of the conversation on the political landscape, on the local landscape, local government. So it's going to have to make us better prepared, because we were not prepared for this war.
Absolutely. Turning our attention to actor, comedian Bill Cosby, a headline, a press release was sent out over the weekend that was quite striking for anybody who read it, I believe. Actor and comedian Bill Cosby will not survive COVID-19 with his underlying medical issues. Andrew, kind of explain this to us.
Well, fall of last year, Mr. Cosby, he was having daily visits to the infirmary because his blood pressure was just spiking extremely high. I visited him a couple of times, and his eyes were like red. I mean, red like the color of a crayon or a paint. And it was because of his blood pressure just being so high, and they could not find ways to get it down. They started supplying him with blood pressure medication. That wasn't working. So the doctor saw him and explained to him, after they did several x-rays and all kinds of stuff, examinations, told him that his carotid arteries on the right and left side had 90% blockage due to plaque buildup. And if they did not remove that plaque from those arteries, that he could possibly have a stroke and or a heart attack. So the doctors were calling Mrs. Cosby, the surgeon, in the middle of the night, and he would explain to her the type of surgery he was going to have, and where he went through the neck, and he cleaned out the plaque 1 month on the right side, and then the next month he cleaned out the plaque on the left side. And Mr. Cosby's eyes cleared up, his blood pressure became very stable, but he ended up on blood pressure medication. And the blood pressure medication has been, you know, somewhat helpful. However, the diet that they offer in the prison is not helpful to his blood pressure. There's a lot of salt in the food, so he's having to try and figure out how to avoid certain foods, how to wash certain foods off in a cup in order to have a meal, whether it's breakfast, lunch, or dinner. So what he has started to do was go to the have people to go to the commissary for him because he can't go. He's blind, and buy the salmon, smoked salmon in packets. It's filled with a lot of preservatives and salt, but what he does, he rinses it off in the packet, and he eats that way. He tries to eat as clean as possible in order to keep his blood pressure stable. So when this pandemic broke out, we knew he would be susceptible to getting this COVID-19, and if he should get it, he would not make it through it. We definitely know that. Just when the pandemic broke out, Scott, 3 weeks ago, the prison ran out of medications. So he was without his blood pressure medication for 2 weeks because companies shut down, factories shut down, pharmaceutical companies shut down. So the people that they were supplying with the medication wasn't the prisons anymore. It was the drug stores. It was the hospitals. So, and then a lot of people started calling their doctors, and they started getting refills on their meds. So it prevented the prison from having medication on hand, and they were trying to give him a substitute, and he would not take it because his blood pressure spiked again. So this is a man who's 100% blind due to glaucoma and has to rely on the aid of CPS workers who are inmates and officers. Right now, that prison is probably the most severely affected prison in Pennsylvania right now. They had an inmate to pass away last week from COVID-19. Three officers, correctional officers, died in the same week 3 weeks ago from COVID-19, and they have a total of 30 cases now and counting of COVID-19 in that prison. And now what they're doing, they're having inmates to make masks. Well, they don't have the proper materials to make masks in that prison, so they've issued Mr. Cosby a total of 3 masks. He has to wash them out in a sink in the prison in his cell every night, hang them up, and let them dry. And you're not supposed to do masks that way, not especially at his age of 82. Then, you know, they don't have the best hygiene in prisons because you're only allowed 3 showers a week. So you can't practice good personal hygiene. And we just felt that Mr. Cosby should have been a part of Governor Wolf's executive order to be released and remanded to house arrest due to his underlying health conditions. He was given 3 to 10 year sentence. He was not given a life nor a death sentence. And we just feel that it's not right to try and execute this American citizen by letting him get COVID-19 because he will not survive it.
Do we know why he was not a part of that order?
The reason why the governor, sources very close to the governor told us 2 weeks ago that Mr. Cosby would be a part of the governor's executive order. The governor had expressed to a number of these people that his sources from state senators and legislators that he felt that Mr. Cosby should be released and remanded to house arrest. But in his order, he put, if you have been convicted of a sex crime and you are violent, but 3 paragraphs down, he said that any nonviolent or elderly inmate with underlying health conditions should be released. But then he put another component in his executive order where he handed his executive order some of the powers down to the prosecutors, who the district attorneys who prosecuted these inmates. Of course, Kevin Steele, the Montgomery County district attorney, he was biased and prejudiced against Mr. Cosby. He said no, he's a sexual violent predator. He's been labeled a sexual violent predator. He's a risk to the community. He's a risk to women in the community. Look, Mr. Cosby, before he was sentenced, after the conviction, He was released and remanded to house arrest. He had an ankle bracelet on. He had a parole officer that came and checked in 2 times a week who searched the property, searched the house. Mr. Cosby never went to a doctor's appointment, never went to a grocery store. He's blind. He's not a menace to the community. He is not COVID-19. He's not a virus. And, you know, for the district attorney to say that Mr. Cosby will be a danger to the community and a danger to women, he should not be released. It just blew up in our face, and we're asking Governor Wolf to amend his executive order. You know, this Mr. Cosby doesn't deserve this, nor does any elderly nonviolent inmate deserve to get this virus and pass away from it.
Andrew, when is the last time, because of all this, you've been able to speak to Mr. Cosby or see him?
I saw Mr. Cosby. I was in Philadelphia the first week of March. I saw him 3 times the first week of March, and that's when he was explaining to me. That was before, you know, this pandemic broke out. I left Philadelphia on March 8th, and then on March 11th, that's when we started hearing the news of a possible pandemic and this virus spreading. He calls in. Tries to call in, and he only gets to make 2 calls, and they're very short. He'll call in to Mrs. Cosby. He'll try to call it in to me just to let us know that he's doing well. But most of the time now, his time is spent in a cell. They only get 45 minutes out of the cell to possibly make a phone call. Normally the phone calls would be 15-minute phone calls, but they're very short. Maybe 2 to 3 minute calls, and he just said, "Hey, I'm doing fine. I don't have any symptoms." Of course, there are no tests in the prison to test these inmates, and we just don't know, you know, what's going on with him. We just know from inside sources, correctional officers and lieutenants at the prison who stay in constant contact with me. They have explained to me that that place is toxic right now, and Mr. Cosby and all elderly inmates should be released and remanded to house arrest.
Do we know if they have been tested? Has Bill Cosby been tested?
He has not been tested. He has not been tested. He has told us they have yet to test him or many of the inmates. The only way they will test you if you begin to have symptoms. Or like the inmate who passed away. That inmate who passed away was a veteran. Like Mr. Cosby was a veteran, and he was in the Navy. So he was on Mr. Cosby's block. But I don't think he ever came in contact with Mr. Cosby. So anyone who was in contact with that inmate who passed away last week, they test those individuals only, the officers or other inmates. Those are the only ones who get a test.
Andrew, what is the, obviously death is a huge fear here at this point, but what can be done? We don't know how long this is going to last. We don't know what precautions are being taken all around. What do you think the timetable is here as far as saving Bill Cosby's life if it is that kind of danger?
Look, immediate. Yesterday, the day before yesterday, last week, Mr. Cosby should have been released. If this virus, look, the government shut down the country, schools, offices, restaurants, you name it, has been shut down due to this virus. The social distancing is in place. There's no way for Mr. Cosby to social distance. We have all been told that prisons are going to be breeding grounds for this virus. I think a prison in Ohio right now has 1,800 infected inmates. 1,800. There's no way for inmates to social distance. There's no such thing as physical distancing in a prison. I've heard, former federal prosecutors, attorney generals say that there's no way that inmates can survive this. Look, it just seems politically motivated against Mr. Cosby because, you know, you're letting guys like Michael Cohen, Avenatti, You let Vinny Osorio out, who's a known mobster. You're letting all of these people out, but you have this guy who's 82 years old, Bill Cosby, a guy who served his country in the Navy. All of his humanitarian efforts he has given to this country from an educational standpoint, you name it. You mean to tell me you're going to force him to stay in the environment when he's blind and just give him a death sentence? I don't understand Governor Wolf's reasoning why he decided to make sure that Mr. Cosby was not a part of his executive order. He's termed out. He cannot run for another election. So what is he afraid of? You know, who is putting pressure on him to say, if you let him out, this is going to happen to you? Who's threatening Governor Wolf? And we're just asking your listeners, you know, everybody in this public, to call Governor Wolf. Put the pressure on him, because I don't see this COVID-19 going anywhere. At first, they told us that the virus doesn't discriminate. Well, now we're seeing and hearing that most people who are passing away are men, elderly people, and people of color. So it does discriminate. I think people are so confused they know nothing about this virus. And it's going to be around for a very long time. And we're asking that Governor Wolf do the right thing. Do the right thing and let this American citizen, as well as all elderly nonviolent inmates, be released and remanded to house arrest.
You know, Andrew, obviously now through the years, you know Bill Cosby very well. Even though you haven't had communication with him in over a month now, what do you think he's going through, mental state, thinking about all this, his age, his health at this particular point, still being incarcerated?
He's nervous. He's nervous. He's in fear of his life right now. One thing he said to me, he said, look, these guys here, he said they're very fearful. And his fear is that if a pandemic really breaks out in that prison, it's going to be pandemonium. It's going to be a riot. And he's going to be caught in the middle of it because he's not going to be able to get out of the way of a riot if it floods through that prison, the virus, and starts infecting hundreds of inmates. It's going to be sheer pandemonium, and they're going to try to overthrow that prison. So his life is in danger in so many ways, and it's just a shame that, you know, Governor Wolf, the Secretary of Prisons, John Wetzel, and all other elected officials in Pennsylvania will set themselves up to be liable and put Mr. Cosby in a situation where his life is in danger, from physical danger to health dangers. His life is in danger right now, and we're just hoping that Governor Wolf will do the right thing. This is not about politics. This is not about your personal issues with an individual. This is about just treating people like decent human beings and not letting anyone, preventing people for succumbing to COVID-19. Look, across this country, the goal is to keep the death rate down, not to increase the death rate. That's why governors across this country are letting people out of prison, releasing them, remanding them to house arrest. If they have months coming up, you know, left on their parole, they're saying, okay, we will let them just stay out and serve their time at home, and assign them a parole officer. Do the right thing, Governor Wolf. That's all we're asking. Do the right thing and let all elderly nonviolent inmates out like Bill Cosby, and do the right thing and remand them to house arrest.
As you say, Governor Wolf, do the right thing. What do you think the chances are at this point, knowing what we all know, that that would happen?
I don't know the chances, but I do believe and feel that this man, I would think he has a heart, and I would think he will, you know, not let political pressure get in the way of him amending his executive order, not let his personal views get in the way and amend his executive order, not let some of the racial hatred that still exists against Mr. Cosby in Pennsylvania get in the way, and he would amend his executive order, and he would let this human being, Bill Cosby, come home and be in a safe and healthy environment where he could get through COVID-19. Look, they have already said in Pennsylvania that the people they release and remand to house arrest after this virus goes away or is controlled, they will have to report back to prison. We're not trying to get Mr. Cosby out so he can escape to some foreign country. That's not our objective nor our goal. This is a man who did his time on house arrest for many months, from June up until September when he was sentenced. He didn't go anywhere. Look at his record. He's been a model citizen all of his life. He was a model citizen while on house arrest waiting to be sentenced. He has been a model citizen at SCI Phoenix Prison. He's been a model citizen there. He has participated in a program called Man Up, where he speaks to these guys every Saturday, telling them how to be better men, better fathers, better community leaders, so when they're released, could they just be decent human beings. And so Governor Wolf should go back and look at Bill Cosby's history. Look at his legacy. Look at a guy who has never been in trouble with the law, never had a criminal background, and do the right thing. And let this decent human being, this American citizen who gave 4 years of his life to the Navy, let him be released and remanded to house arrest.
Andrew, a final question here. As far as you go, not only are you his representative, but you are his friend.
Correct.
How do you feel at this point?
It's devastating. It's devastating. It makes me feel as though, you know, you hear people talk about, you know, the civil rights movement. You hear people talk about what individuals went through with slavery. You hear people talk about the Holocaust. You know, you hear people talk about all of those things and how they were tortured and how they were subjected to certain things, and to not only just the beatings, but subjected to being test babies for syphilis studies and all of those type of things. And you hear what people went through in this country, and now, you know, it makes me reflect. We just celebrated Passover, and the story of Passover from Exodus is when God asked Pharaoh to let his people go, and Pharaoh refused, and he sent Moses in, and he delivered the people when Pharaoh decided to let them go after God put a plague on Pharaoh in Egypt. Well, you know, we now have a plague on this country, and I think this is just God saying to us, hey, we need to start treating people right. We need to start treating people like human beings. We need to remove this hatred out of our hearts. And this is our plague. Who would have ever thought of hearing and reading those stories in Exodus that we, in the 21st century, would actually experience a plague? And now we're seeing it. So when you put it in that spiritual context, you know, this is a time for people to do the right thing, come together, and band together and figure out how we can make it through this pandemic, because we can. But we have to remove our hatred. We have to remove personal issues we have against people. We have to remove politics from it, because it's about saving human lives, and that's what we're trying to do, and that's what I'm trying to do, is save human lives and save Bill Cosby's life. And get him released and remanded to house arrest. And that's my overall goal, that's my objective, and I will stay on this path as long as God gives me life and breath. I will do that.
Andrew Wyatt, personal representative and friend of legendary comedian Bill Cosby, who is incarcerated currently in Pennsylvania, and a lot of fear regarding his health in the COVID-19 pandemic due to health concerns in the past. Thank you, Andrew. Always a pleasure.
Thank you so much, Scott. Have a great day.
Take
Be
care.
Safe.
We thank Tracy Kinsler, Andrew Wyatt, and we've got more in 10 minutes. Stay here.
About it because other people are asking questions and talking about it. And, of course, Trump supporters that I even brought up the race question. But, you know, I didn't get the